Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today in digest form, World Radio Magazine for November 2008. Well, radio is published by Armin Noble, call N6WR. The editor is Nancy Gott, KOTT. Her call is WZ8C. The headquarters of World Radio is World Radio Incorporated, 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyam System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handyam members only. Any of these may violate copyright laws. Handyams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address, handyham@courage.org. Our website, www.handyham.org. Let's go right away to World Radio Newsfront. Material furnished by the Amateur Radio News, courtesy of the American Radio Relay League, Letter, and the Newsline. Very important commentary, first of all, for those of you who monitor the shortwave bands or those of you who try to participate. With a license, of course. You do have to have an amateur radio license furnished by the Federal Communications Commission. This may be a hobby, but it's no joke, folks. It's really serious, but great business as a hobby. And just for fun, not only for public service and disasters and things that you read about. Here's an announcement. CQ, worldwide, 160-meter phone contest date is changed. Digressing just for a second. CQ represents CQ Magazine. They are famous for their contests on all the different bands in amateur radio throughout the world, and there are several million amateur radio operators everywhere. So it's important for them, if they're going to chase DX, which is long-distance communications with stations in parts of the world other than their own location, they want to know when the contest is, because that's what keeps the hobby interesting. In radio sports news, the dates for the 2009 CQ Worldwide 160-meter phone contest was postponed by a week to avoid conflict with the American Radio Relay League DX CW contest. The 2009 CQ Worldwide 160-meter phone contest will take place between 27 February and 01 March 2009. That was furnished by CQ Magazine, and the AR Newsline. Now, just a little fill-in there, folks. ARRL represents the American Radio Relay League. DX is a comment relative to indicating that we're looking at distant stations outside of the contiguous United States, and CW is actually Morse code. CW represents continuous wave forms, but we call it Morse code. And what else here? Oh, the word phone, P-H-O-N-E, you know, telephone. It's not telephone. Phone is the word that's used in conjunction with voice communications. It's talking back and forth. The real importance of this notice, I'm giving you more time trying to explain it to you than what it said, because a lot of you are not amateur radio operators. You're listening here on the Massachusetts Reading Network or the Courage Handyam System and are either learning about ham radio or trying to qualify for testing. So you have to know some of these things. But all the words, the phrases, the acronyms, and so forth are very, very important for your knowledge base. You thought this was just a fun listen on a Sunday night, huh? No, it ain't. The next one, for instance, is also in sort of that category. It says LCWO. Well, there's another acronym. That is Lima Charlie Whiskey Oscar, which is International Phonetic Explanations, using words that are commonly understood throughout the world for a letter, no matter what the language is, okay? So, again, LCWO teaches Morse on the web. That means that this LCWO, which represents, what does it represent? Let's see. Learning CW online. Wow, LCWO. You know, I have to have a little fun with this too, don't I? So here's what it says. LCWO.net. Whoops, slow down. .net. What does that tell you? Well, if you don't know what .net means, it means you have to be online. You have to have a computer. You have to have invested in X number of dollars to listen or to use that particular website that you hear everybody, every station, every commercial, every banner on the highway telling you, go to .net.org, .gov, or stuff like that. You know, us people that work out of this system with the Courage Handyham system and also the Massachusetts Reading Network and those people that are sight or print impaired don't always get involved that deeply. So I have to commiserate with you because that's really the way it is in this world now. And we have to face it. If you don't have an internet connection, I'm sorry. Those of you who do and you want to really learn from this piece, it's only a short piece, listen up. Starting again, LCWO.net is a new website to learn and practice Morse telegraphy. That's Morse code. Called Learn CW Online. All you need for using LCWO is a web browser. A web browser is any one of those search engines on the internet like Microsoft, or Yahoo. There's a million of them out there. That's not the problem. This gives the user the opportunity to practice CW, continuous wave. That's Morse code. Wherever an internet connection is available. It also lets users retain their personal settings, scores, and statistics. They're taking that further because they're allowing you as a novice or a person who doesn't know the code but wants to learn it for whatever your purpose is, can actually keep score how well you're doing. You begin, you fumble, you don't remember the letters or the words. Next thing you know, a week or two later, if you keep after it, you can see where you were. That's like those thermometer-taking things and the blood pressure meters that you have at home, those of you who can afford them, that tells you what your last reading was. It's a great world if you don't weaken, isn't it, huh? Check it out at www.lcwo.net. Thanks to Web News for that one. Boy, we got a lot more than 2 inches worth of text out of that, didn't we? Stay awake. The next piece in World Radio News is for you hardcore amateur radio operators or aficionados who like to follow the satellites. AO, that's Alpha Oscar, AO16, on for now in bent pipe mode. Wow! The temperature on board the AMSAT Oscar 16 ham satellite has come up enough so that the watchdog timing problem has gone away. On 01 September 2008, AMSAT North America Vice President for Operations Drew Glassbrenner, called KO4MA, turned the satellite on. He then commanded it into bent pipe mode. As a result, AO16 now operates as a cross-mode, cross-band voice repeater with an uplink on 145.920 FM. That's the 2-meter band, folks. The downlink is reduced carrier AM, similar to double sideband on 437.052 megahertz. Most stations find receiving the downlink on upper sideband works best. Work is continuing to predict how long this latest period of operation may last, but initial estimates are around 2 to 3 months total. There may not be another opportunity to use Alpha Oscar 16 after this because the satellite will generally head toward longer ellipses and lower temperatures for several years. That's furnished by ANS through the Newsline. Now, here's an interesting thing in the legalistics. Call W3NYI, Whiskey 3, November, Yankee, India, wins tower battle. Chuck Mills called W3NYI, who lives in a small town east of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, was granted a permit and then had it lifted by Penn Township officials after neighbors complained about his plan to erect a 53-foot tilt-over crank-up tower in his development. Amateur Radio Relay League volunteer legal counsel Michael Lasseroff, called K3AIR, stepped in and tried to allay concerns of the township officials. But when Lasseroff tried to meet all concerns raised by the township in a second filing for a permit, he got a call from the township's attorney that the second application would likely be denied. But that didn't stop Lasseroff. He told a town attorney that the small community could be facing an expensive legal battle, which he predicted it would lose if it denied the second permit. Lasseroff also noted a story in a local press report that the township treasurer complained that the municipality already had exhausted. What else is new, huh? Its legal budget for the year, handling Mill's appeal hearing. They must not have put too much in that budget, huh, folks? Then Lasseroff's research into state law found language stating any building permit application not acted upon within 15 business days is automatically granted. Lasseroff sent the township a letter citing the statute and advising officials that any interference in the timeline would result in an immediate lawsuit. 2 days after the 15-day period expired, Lasseroff said Mills received his permit. Meanwhile, legislative remedies to prevent future problems like the one Mills faced are making their way through Pennsylvania State House and the Senate. The Pennsylvania Senate is preparing to pass a bill barring municipalities from interfering with amateur radio tower installations. The bill contains an amendment mentioning a possible height restriction for certain townships, but left it open to legal interpretation whether any restriction would have to be followed. The Pennsylvania House has a similar bill without the amendment awaiting action. Those lobbying for the passage of the bill say there appears to be a broad base of bipartisan support for addressing the issue. Thanks to AR Newsline for that. Here's another interesting piece for those of you who listen on the shortwave bands. New solar beacon down under. A new solar-powered QRP beacon is operating on a frequency of 3.686 megahertz with an output power of only 90 milliwatts. To digress just for a second, QRP is what's called a Q signal for amateur radio operators. And the beacon is a one-frequency tone going out to the world at very, very low power. And you notice it mentions output power of only 90 milliwatts. Think back on your English classes, ladies and gentlemen. That's a little bit of power, a very little bit. The transmitter feeds a half-wave dipole and is in a horse stable at Beverley, a historic settlement in Western Australia's Wheat Belt country, about 130 kilometers east of the city of Perth. So far, it's been heard in VK2, VK4, and VK6. Those VK are what's called prefixes. The 2, 4, and 6 represent different specific areas down under in perhaps Auckland or, you know, those different islands over there. Its owner is Barry Burns, VK6ADI. He welcomes any and all reception reports via email to this address. It's his call sign, lowercase, VK6DIR@BIGPOND.com. That's his call, VK6DIR@BigPond.com. Thanks to WIA News. Well, we're 14 minutes into the broadcast, folks, and I haven't let the editor have her log spoken yet. I better get to that before Nancy Cott gets mad at us here at the Massachusetts Reading Network or the Courage AM system. So here we go, the editor's log. When hams talk about getting some new wallpaper for their shack, they are not discussing changing the decor of their radio rooms. Wallpaper is ham speak for paper certificates. Paper chasing, or the collecting of these certificates, is an offshoot of amateur radio and a hobby in its own right. There are many types of wallpaper. Special event stations offer the most popular and interesting. Special event stations are temporary on-the-air operations in celebration of a local civic festival or commemorative anniversary. Typically held in a public place, they not only provide some attention-grabbing wallpaper to adorn shack walls, they are an opportunity to display amateur radio to the public. An event is a good club activity. It requires less work and volunteers than field day, but still allows for a change of scene and opportunity for camaraderie. Almost anything can qualify as a special event. Oftentimes, the more offbeat, the better. You can even make up your own. Back in the olden days, my friend Brian, called W8BL, and I were bemoaning the fact that it was another 8 months until field day. And what a shame it was that we had to operate our stations inside when it was such a beautiful autumn weekend. After bouncing around a few ideas, we decided to take a drive to a town a few hours away named Hell, that's what it says, H-E-L-L, and have a special event. They're going to hell, apparently. The next day, we packed up our gear, set up on a picnic table, threw a dipole. Dipole, folks, is really a wire, you know, a copper wire, between a certain something that holds them up on either end. A dipole in the trees, and we were in business. After we made a few contacts, word spread, and we had pileups. This is not the throughway or the corner shopping mall pileup, folks. Pileup is ham speak, again, for a lot of stations trying to get into the special event frequency that they're operating off of just to get the wallpaper, which is actually usually a 3x5 little postcard that many of you, even if you're not ham radio operators, are probably familiar with. It's really quite the hobby. Local residents stopped by to chat and check out our station, and we had a good time. We took some photos of Brian standing under the Welcome to Hell, Michigan. There actually is a place there, huh? Sign for the wallpaper, which we printed up on our computers. Even without the opportunity to publicize our event, the QSL rate, QSL is the actual confirmation rate that someone sends a card to someone else anywhere in the world and they get one back, is the QSL rate, was nearly 100% for our certificate because it was an unusual location and the wallpaper was creative. Best of all, we did something impromptu and fun with amateur radio. Other types of wallpaper are achievement certificates that you earn by meeting operating requirements such as worked all states or worked all continents or worldwide DX we talked about earlier. These are getting more controversial with the increased use of assists to complete the requirements. Is the purpose of this wallpaper to validate that you spent time on the air hunting and searching for the contacts needed to earn it? Or is your focus more on getting it done and over with? If you got those last few states by using one of the amateur radio schedules, that's arranging an on-air meeting, or chat rooms that are popping up all over the internet, your sense of accomplishment would be quite different from someone else who spent hours scouring the bands for them. Tell me about it. I lean toward the anticipation version of achievement certificates rather than the instant gratification method. Sure, it is fun to work all states in a relatively short period, but you are missing the thrill of the hunt. In addition, once you've gotten a certificate, the hunt is over, and you will have to find another piece of paper to chase. What's your hurry? Searching the bands for that elusive Rhode Island or South Dakota will improve your operating techniques. You will discover which bands are open during what time of day. That means you have to work at it. How your antenna is working in different directions, if you have one. And effective ways of calling CQ, Charlie, Quebec. is actually the international signification that I'm trying to reach somebody out there. Call back, please. CQ, 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 this is. All of which will be to your benefit when you decide to operate contests or break through a pileup. There's that word again. Still an editor's log here. Nancy Cott goes on to say, looking through this month's World Radio, there are several special event stations commemorating the loss of the Edmund Fitzgerald, as well as for Veterans Day and the 150th anniversary of the Fire Island Lighthouse. No matter what your operating skills or experience level, paper chasing is a lot of fun, and the wallpaper will make your shack look impressive. If you haven't tried it, I urge you to get on the air and look for special event stations. Once that wallpaper starts showing up in your mailbox, I am Betty, you will be hooked on this facet of amateur radio. And that's thanks to Nancy Cott, K-O-T-T. Nancy's call is Whiskey Zulu 8 Charlie, W-Z-8-C. Nancy welcomes any comments, mail or otherwise, at P.O. Box 807, Hadley, Michigan, MI, 48440. But we call that snail mail in ham radio lingo. If you have internet connection, you can send it to nanci at tir.com. Nancy at tir.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as I scan the pages, I don't pre-read this material. I get it in the mail, and I look at it, and I say, let's go. Now, Nancy Cott just commented about three of those events, special events. Since they come about 3 or 4 days later with the announcement, I'll give the pertinent short answer information to you. Fire Island Lighthouse, Great South Bay. Amateur Radio Club will operate special event station called W2GSB / LH, 1100 UTC through 2000 UTC 01 November 2008 from the 150-year-old Fire Island Lighthouse in Bayshore, New York, celebrating its 150 years of service. The lighthouse was built in 1858 and is still in operation today. Be a part of history and give us a call at frequencies 14.260, 7.250, 3.755 single sideband, 14.040, 7.030, 3.530 CW. So forth and so on. The next one, remembering the Edmund Fitzgerald. Stillwater Amateur Radio Association, that's S-A-R-A, SARA, will operate special event station W0JH, Whiskey Zero Juliet Hotel, from 01 through 03. That's the 1st through the 3rd of November 2008, remembering the Edmund Fitzgerald, the iron ore tanker ship sinking on Lake Superior. Two amateur radio stations operating from Split Rock Lighthouse, which is ARHLS USA 783, Split Rock, Minnesota. SARA is in operation from 1500 Zulu on the 1st of November through 0100 Zulu on the 3rd of November 2008 on single sideband. 3.860, 7.260, 14.260, 21.360 megahertz. They're on PSK. There are certificates available. Certificates available via same address, stamped envelope, SASC, to SARA. Call W0JH 1618 West Pine Street, Stillwater, Minnesota 55082. The other station mentioned is Stu Rockefeller Amateur Radio Society. They'll be operating special event station November 8 Foxtrot and Kilo 8 Foxtrot, N8F and K8F. They'll be operating from 1800 Zulu on the 7th of November through 1800 Zulu on the 9th of November 2008. Remembering the Edmund Fitzgerald at Whitefish Point, Michigan. Frequencies are consistent with those mentioned prior. And if you're a listener, is look around and you want to listen for the Remembering Edmund Fitzgerald Special Event Stations. Certificate there is available to Richard Barker, W8VS, 264 Northeast Street, Brighton, Michigan, 48116. Now, Veterans Day. There are several commentaries regarding Veterans Day. Michigan Amateur Radio Alliance will operate special event station W8USA, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, from 8 and 9 November 2008 in honor of Veterans Day. This event will be held at the Grand Rapids Home for Veterans in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The frequencies are quite common. You might want to search them to listen for that station for Veterans Day. And one other Veterans Day commentary, they're in here frequently, the Baton Rouge Amateur Radio Club and the USS Kidd, K-I-D-D, that's the naval vessel, K-I-D-D, Amateur Radio Club will operate special event station W5KID on the vessel, the USS KID in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 11 November 2008 to celebrate Veterans Day. They'll be on air, this is Central Time, 9 a.m. to 4:45 p.m., so if your other time zones, calculate that time. Time may be expanded depending on the visiting schedule for the ship. Sort of switching gears right now. Attention, new hams. The author here is Armand Noble. Call N6WR. Armand, if you listen closely at the introduction, is the editor of this publication, World Radio Magazine. Each month we send every newly licensed amateur radio operator one issue of World Radio. Having been licensed for 50 years, I may be in a position to offer a little advice. You'll get out of amateur radio exactly what you put into it. Membership in your local radio club will pay great benefits. You'll have a resource for your questions, and don't be afraid to ask them. Everyone once started from zero. In time, you'll be answering the questions for tomorrow's newcomers. Be active. Go on field day. Participate in club activities. One of the very first things you should do is become a member of the American Radio Relay League. We refer to that as the ARRL. If it weren't for the ARRL, we wouldn't have the amateur radio that we have today. They battle for our frequencies when other services wanted them. Recently, when there was a movement to put the Internet on power lines, creating massive interference to the amateur bands, the ARRL fought it. They represent us in Washington, D.C. Oh, you may hear some grumpy old-timers complain, back in the 1952, the ARRL took away some of my privileges. Now, that was the Federal Communications Commission. As a member, you vote for your local section manager and your division director and vice director who represent you at ARRL board meetings. The division conventions are great places to learn more at the seminars and enjoy the camaraderie that is a great part of amateur radio. And you will receive QST. That's the magazine. In fact, we read it here for you folks every other month, which could be called Continuing Education. Should you develop an interest in contesting or DXing, we can highly recommend the magazine CQ. Now, as an aside, folks, this is Bob, your reader again. I've begun reading CQ in digest form for the Courage Handy Ham System in Golden Valley, Minnesota. The Courage System is a fantastic organization that provides help, training, all kinds of information for people who are unable to read or do things for themselves. Handicapped folks, of course. It's called the Handicap System. If you'd be interested in checking them out, I really would strongly recommend you going to that particular internet website. We talked about that before, didn't we? It's Handy Hams. Well, it's www.handyhams, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M-S, Handy Hams at Courage, C-O-U-R-A-G-E, .org. Here on Leisure Pursuits for the Massachusetts Reading Network, we don't include the CQ readings at this point in time in the schedule of events for the Massachusetts Reading Network. It is available. I do that, as I just said I did for the Courage Handy Him System and other organizations. But the time constraints are different and the scheduling is different with an operation like the Courage Handy Him System vis-a-vis the Massachusetts Reading Network. If you're interested in it, you could contact the TIC office and tell them that you'd like to hear recordings on the digest format of CQ Magazine, and they might be able to work into your schedule. Now, continuing with the article, for many, amateur radio isn't just a hobby. It's a way of life. Sadly, many miss out on what it has to offer and drop out. There are many different interest fields within amateur radio. One or more can lead you to the enriching activities that make this a truly great avocation. But you have to search them out and find some assistance along the way. All that I can ever wish is that you find the enjoyment and make the kind of friends that have accrued to me in this wonderful activity. There's another article this month in the November 2008 World Radio Magazine about promotion and recruitment. It's headlined, Elmer's, Ham Radio's Ambassadors. The author is Devere D. Logan, W1HEO. There's something like the personal touch. Many of us first experience the enthusiasm and enjoyment of ham radio by our personal contact with a licensed operator. We tip our hats to these many mentors or Elmers, like in Elmer's glue. Many of us might never have become licensed or caught on the air without their guidance. While our efforts to promote and publicize amateur radio may raise public awareness, the critical next step is to nurture it into personal interest and eventually the desire to become licensed. An Elmer best handles this important step. In fact, an Elmer could be the most important person to influence the decision to become a radio amateur. Now here's Elmer defined. The term Elmer has been around for many years. We might also call an Elmer a mentor, tutor, guide, helper, sage, coach, instructor, guru, or go-to person. The name doesn't matter. What does matter is an Elmer's contagious enthusiasm for the wonderful world of ham radio. First impressions are important, and good Elmers typically offer a warm welcome and a smile to anyone who asks about our radio service. While you may consider this the foundation of good salesmanship, there is more to it than simply making the sale. Every personal contact is unique, just as every person who inquires about amateur radio is unique. So, describing ham radio should be customized according to the individual. For example, a young person who is computer-oriented and uses a variety of high-tech devices might respond more readily to the many digital dimensions of our hobby rather than simply radio alone. Ham radio offers a variety of appeals for a variety of interests. Now, regarding Elmer's toolkit, Elmers usually have to answer a variety of questions, so being prepared to respond to a number of subjects is important. To help its volunteer Elmer Corps members, the Ham Radio Promotion Project, there's a website for that, www.neoham.org, that's Neo Ham, www.neoham.org, develop a reference manual or toolkit that includes several basic categories. First, where can a person go for detailed information on ham radio? The handy list would include libraries, bookstores, ARRL, radio publications such as World Radio, local radio clubs scheduled radio classes, websites, and even other radio amateurs. Not all sources are created equal. If you check your local library, you may be surprised to find that their amateur radio books, if they're available, may be out of date. A check of our local library revealed some ancient license manuals dating back to the 1960s. We had a chat with the librarian, removed the obsolete books, and replaced them with new titles. Our radio club even donated a few. The Ham Radio Promotion Project's Elmer's Manual indicates a listing of specific sources of licensing help. Here is where radio club licensing classes fill a need. An alternative is to refer persons to online services, if you have internet connections, of course. So our reference includes several website addresses. Many of the websites offer special tests. A Google search will reveal a good number of these. Radio Club licensing classes are certainly one of the best ways to help newcomers prepare for the licensing exams. This is an important benefit for clubs because it establishes it as the logical focus of local amateur radio activity and support. Obviously, inviting students to join the club is an effective way to build membership. To cover the usual questions about ham radio, we include a list of frequently asked questions, FAQs, in our Elmer's manual. We also distribute this FAQ sheet at public presentations. Now, there's the Elmer Corps, C-O-R-P-S. Recruiting Elmers can be as challenging as recruiting new hams. Starting your area's Elmer Corps would likely begin with radio clubs. We can spread the invitation to become a volunteer Elmer via club newsletter articles and the personalized recruiting appeals at meetings. One of the best ways is to extend a personal invitation to those amateurs who appear to have the right stuff and are comfortable with dealing with the public. Once a core group of Elmers is formed, the public should be made aware of who they are and how to contact them. In the Northeast Ohio area, we used our roster of volunteers to produce an amateur radio help directory with the names and contact information of Elmers arranged alphabetically by city. Our directory was first added to our website, followed by the creation of a printed brochure version on a PC. Our design was simply done on an 8x10 sheet with three panels, two folds, front and back. The brochure also included a brief description of amateur radio, a bit about what hams do, and a short list of information sources. We hand out this help directory at public demonstrations and distribute it to the press, teachers, scout leaders, and whomever. This is a very important link to a volunteer Elmer for anyone interested in seeking more information on ham radio. Active, healthy radio clubs are buzzing with enthusiastic, gung-ho members and are generally the center of most ham radio activity in town. Active clubs are necessary to assure the future of amateur radio by sponsoring radio classes, handling volunteer examiner sessions for testing, and recruiting new hams. How radioactive is the club in your area? Does it have enough active members to get things done? Is it growing or standing still? Does it need a tonic to energize it? What does it take to build a successful club? One way to spot a good radio club is that its members are having fun while enjoying a variety of activities. If it's fun, they will come. One way to promote the fun is to keep club meetings short, light, and lively. Offer interesting programs and keep the business portion short and to the point. Try to handle planning them, business details during board meetings, or cover them in a newsletter. Smiles and fun are magnets for members, new and old. Good clubs have a variety of good activities. The most popular subjects will be those that appeal to the interests of members, so it pays to know what they want. So ask them. Conduct regular surveys and find out what they don't want, too. Most active clubs publish a newsletter, which can serve as a meeting reminder and cover news of club activities. Use your newsletter to promote your club by expanding its circulation to include potential members, new licensees, area media, schools, and youth groups. Put it on the internet and promote the address widely. Folks, I'm going to digress this for a second, away from the actual reading of this article, because it's quite lengthy. But refer back to what I just told you from the printed material. I'll give you two illustrations. If you have internet capabilities, many of you do, even though a lot of you don't, here on the Massachusetts Reading Network, the Talking Information Center, but also the Courage Anti-Amp system. If you want a wonderful illustration of quality presentation on amateur radio on the internet, you could go to this website. It's very short. It's www.semara, www.samara.org. www.samara.org. That's my local organization for ham radio here in eastern Massachusetts near Cape Cod. Another absolutely marvelous organization is the Courage Handy Ham System. Courage Handy Ham System. Their website is www.handiham.org. Handy Ham is spelled there with one word, Handy Ham. www.handyham.org. These two organizations, in my estimation anyway, probably could give you the most beautiful internet presentation of what can be made available to anyone interested in anything new relative to ham radio, and most especially the Courage Handy Ham System, because that deals basically with people who have problems, whatever they are. It could be print impaired, sight impaired, physically impaired. Courage Handy Ham System actually trains people in various and sundry ways to become amateur radio operators. Many people that have become disabled find this hobby to be a fantastic way of spending a lot of hours enjoying themselves as long as they can. So again, that's SAMARA, which is really Southeastern Massachusetts Amateur Radio Association. It's www.samara.org. If you have the internet, look at that website. You can see very easily a beautiful monthly newsletter and also all the other interesting links that they can take you to. And the other again, www.handyham.org. I'll conclude this article in the last paragraph. Finding new members should be a regular part of a radio club's agenda. Clubs lose members for a variety of reasons, and without a plan to replace them, the club will stagnate. Keeping the club name in the public eye should be a continuing effort. Promote your club by sending a newsletter and news releases to area newspapers, elected officials, schools, and emergency management personnel. Sending club meeting invitations to local hams or having members contact others by telephone or email provides good one-on-one benefits. Getting the word out about club activities is easily done via local repeaters. The author is D. Logan. Your call is W1HEO, Whiskey One Hotel Echo Oscar. This charming lady has been active in radio clubs for 45 years and is a professional writer and public relations counselor. You can contact D. Logan at that name with the letters, D-E-L-O-G-A-N at ameritech.net. D-E-L-O-G-A-N at ameritech.net. Let's check out the hamfests. That's another word for amateur radio flea markets. A lot of people love to go to flea markets. The ham radio ones are usually a lot bigger than the ones that you see flea markets, that is, on people's lawns. Let's go to Alabama. The Montgomery Amateur Radio Club Ham Fest will be held on the 8th of November from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Garrett Coliseum, South Alabama State Fairgrounds, Federal Drive, Montgomery, Alabama. State of Indiana, Allen County Amateur Radio Technical Society Incorporated, that's called ACT Arts, Ham Fest and Computer Expo will be held between the 15th and 16th of November at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum at the corner of Indiana, 930, that's Coliseum Boulevard, and Parnell Avenue, Fort Wayne, Indiana. I hope they have a building there, folks, if it's raining or snowing. Some of that expensive ham gear wouldn't hold up too well in a rainstorm or snow, I suppose. Now, in the beautiful state of Iowa, Davenport Radio Amateur Club Ham Fest and Computer Show is going to be on the 2nd of November 2008. Most of you might catch that if you're getting this via cassettes or whatever. Now, Oklahoma, Enid Ham Fest Group. The Ham Fest will be held on the 1st of November at Garfield County Fairgrounds Hoover Building at 302 East Oxford, Enid, Oklahoma. And I might add there also, folks, that if you're not a ham radio operator, no matter where you are, whether you're listening here on the New England outlet of the Talking Information Center or worldwide on the reading about it on the Internet, you can search out ham radio by looking oftentimes right into the special yellow pages. I think they still exist. Or just looking around, see who's got a big antenna sticking up on the in the backyard or off the roof or something, and check that person out to lead you to some really interesting and fascinating things to do with your spare time. And folks, lest you think that this is just a man's hobby, and that's not true. There are many YLs, young ladies, that are amateur radio operators as well. A little bit of information about the YL Net, informal YL Net. Your author here is Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R. Her call is, and 0WBV, November 0, Whiskey Bravo Victor. She goes on to say, well, it has definitely fallen my part of the world, so that means more time for radio. But even with summer's fluctuating conditions, this has been an amateur radio year. The members of the Young Ladies Radio League, that's YLRL, have started an informal net, as you heard in the last YL column. You do not have to be a YLRL member, but you do have to be a YL. That's a young lady again. Young, incidentally, could go up to 197 years of age if you could make it that far to join in the discussion. There have been a couple of OMs. Those are old men. Oh, men. OM. Who checked in on the net, not realizing it was for ladies. But they were welcome, and the basis of the net explained. The net alternates between a 40-meter slant 20-meter net and a 20-meter net. Now, folks, this is Bob. I'm not going to try to explain all that. We're running short on time here. The net is held on the following frequency, 7.240 and 14.288, starting at 0100 UTC, Universal Time Constant, on Thursday nights. I should mention UTC. Ladies and gentlemen, UTC is actually what most of you know as military time or Greenwich Mean Time. You know, the world changes all the uses of letters in these acronyms. Now it's officially known as Universal Time Constant. But if you go down the Thames out of London, you'll still see Greenwich, England. And there's that spot, zero latitude in the world. On the nights it starts on 40 meters, it switches to 20 meters at 0130 UTC. It is held in the general portion of the bands, with those not able to operate there encouraged to find a control operator and get on with everyone. A couple of ladies who have gotten on with the control operator have enjoyed themselves so much that they are now working on their upgrades. Good luck with the steadies, ladies. The Young Ladies Radio League also held their convention this year in Huntsville, Alabama. It was held in conjunction with the Huntsville Hamfest and the Haylark, that's Huntsville, Alabama Young Ladies Amateur Radio Club, were the sponsors of the event. They did a wonderful job hosting. The board held their meeting early on Friday so that they could report to the ladies during the business meeting. After the meeting, we had a wonderful lunch. The Highlarks manned the doors and passed out Hamfest information while the YLRL had a table inside. With thousands of people attending, it was a great way to make new friends and get that eyeball with someone you had only met on the air. Not only did a number of the YLs stop by, but also quite a few OMs had their YL in mind when they stopped to get information. It's always great, folks, if you are guys listening to this and you want to get your wife to let you play more with your radio, to get her into it with a ham radio license. And I suppose for a YL who has a husband that sits around watching too much football or baseball, she could probably do the same thing and attack him with information about amateur radio. The DX Banquet's main speaker was Ann Santos, called WA1S, who spoke about her recent expedition to Clipperton Island. A great presentation, and so many ladies were there to hear it and find out more about working and being DX stations. A wonderful event for the whole weekend, and the conventions don't stop there. So, what are you doing this winter? Putting up a new antenna? Trying out a new rig? Let me know what the YLs in your area have planned. From paper chasing to rag chewing to contests to DX, ladies, I know you are out there. Where do we go next? Now, if anybody has a suggestion, seriously, for Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R, you can email her at n0wbv@earthlink.net, or you can write to Cheryl Muir at P.O. Box 342, Littleton, Colorado, C-O, 80160. We'll move along now to the Quarter Century Wireless Association, QCWA membership, a fun shell game by Alan Pickering, KJ9N. My 7-year-old granddaughter, Sarah Kate, always has one request when she comes from North Carolina to visit us here in West Central Florida. She wants us to take her to one of the West Coast Florida beaches so she can spend a couple of hours shelling. Shelling does not, and never has, nor never will, excite my interest in the natural world. Radio wave propagation does, but strolling down a mile or so of wet sand looking for a perfect shell just doesn't do it for me. Oh, I do enjoy the time spent with my granddaughter in conversation and amusement as she discovers shells of various varieties and sizes and then shows them to me. But I get no great buzz from the plodding along on Gulf-created wet sand, seeking shells that resemble a cornucopia or a flower fan or any other of the myriad of shapes and forms which so excite Sarah Kate. She is always on the lookout for perfect shells, which are without blemish, perfectly formed from a geometrical point of view, internally bright and with iridescent ivy, and unworn by time or tide or travel to the shore. But even the imperfect shells we find, of which there are literally thousands present in this littoral environment, seem to have such an attraction that a plastic grocery bag full must be collected and carried home to amaze mother and the other grandmother as well. And I find that as the collection grows in bulk and weight, that there are lessons to be learned from this shell game that so attracts Sarah Kate. First of all, in spite of the beauty of the few of the shells that are found, my attraction is drawn unexpectedly to the large number of shells that are nowhere perfect at all. Even in their imperfection, they are simply more interesting, causing me to speculate as to just how they got to be that way. Some pockmarked with holes or broken edges, reduced by the ravages of salt and surf, and a constant stress of unseen storms beneath the surface of the sea, remind me that I, too, have aged. Oh, yeah. And now show clearly the wear and tear of life. Yes. How fleeting is what little perfection I might have once displayed. Just as some of these shells have been bleached white by the sun, so have I now acquired ever whiter and lighter hair, as indeed have my QCWA peers and friends whose love for amateur radio link us across the miles we've traveled along RF roads that are there for us to travel by way of virtual waves of oscillating origin. So, in their weather-textured and pockmarked imperfection, these less-than-perfect shells call to me with a refreshing message. Lives lived well with amateur radio friends will show the result of time given and the energy spent in the development of lifelong friendships. Truly, the QCWA is very much a membership of metallic men and women, with silver in our hair, gold in our teeth, and lead in our pants. And when I stop long enough to consider more accurately the benefits of my membership in the QCWA, I have to be very grateful for the gifts of knowledge and the offerings of experience that others acquired first and then passed on to me. Indeed, no man or woman is alone totally self-educated, self-trained, or self-sufficient. We've all had and will always need the presence of good elders to pass along to us the benefits of their discoveries and experiences as operators who take pride in at least 25 years of skills acquired and then shared. That is why the Quarter Century Wireless Association is so much like the plastic bag of shells that Sarah Kate brings home from the shore she so diligently searches. A mix of none perfect, many almost perfect, and a huge plethora of not-so-perfect denizens whose lives have been ever so changed by the relentless shifts of wind, shore, water, and the ravages of life, but who persist and stay always committed to the ideals of the chapters and the associations to which they belong. And how very interesting they all are. Some more kind, some more smart, some more intelligent and knowledgeable, some most rich and wealthy, some addicted to CW, some to the other digital modes, some HF2, some UHF only, but the bulk of these QCW stakeholders are all folks with some minor perfections, yet they are colleagues still well worth betting upon. Because of the abysmal mess that our legislatures have made of things in these most recent years, I sense among us a great yearning for perfection. If only we could perfect our national system of taxation, and immigration, and education, and health care, and on. And thus we search for the perfect seashore shell. Surely there must be a few there, resting among the thousands upon which we trod. By the law of averages, there must be. But no, perfection is not of this world. Looking for perfection is just another shell game, fun for a couple of hours and pure boredom thereafter. Instead, I believe that we have a much higher calling, a call to acceptance and charity and care for our colleagues and friends, a call to recruit them into our amateur radio fellowship and into full participation in the local and national activities of the QCWA. The next time Sarah Kate wants to go shelling when she visits, I plan to join her and look not for the perfect shell, but the most convoluted, twisted up, strangely shaped variety I can find. And then on the way home, I plan to explain to Sarah Kate just how wonderful that particular and different shell really is, uniquely formed and then battered about by the forces of nature, and just waiting there in the sands of the shore for us to find and appreciate. And then I am going to tell her that every time Grandpa gets on his radio, he is engaging in a form of shelling, speaking with people who are just as special and unique and great to know, just like the shell she finds along the shores of the gulf that together we explore. And you know, I think she'll understand that lesson and tell her mother about it. Well, I hope so. I really do. For in my mind, that lesson is the essence of what makes the QCWA such a great group. We are the elite, the proud, and the many. We are the QCWA, the Quarter Century Wireless Association. Until next time, my best to all of you. 73, Allen, KJ9N. That completes Allen's commentary. If anyone would like to contact him, it's Allen Pickering, P-I-C-K-E-R-I-N-G. Call Kilo Juliet 9 November. He can be reached by sending mail to 31860 Taylor Grade Road, Duet, D-U-E-T-T-E, Florida, F-L, 33834. Or you can email him at his call sign, lowercase, KJ9N, at ARRL.net. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this brings me up to time just about for the digest reading of World Radio Magazine for November 2008. World Radio is published by Armin Noble. His call is N6WR. World Radio headquarters is at 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. If you'd like to give them a call, talk about a subscription or whatever, it's area 916-457-3655. If any of you would like to comment to the readings that we present to you through the Courage Handy Hemp System, again, my name is Bob Zeida, spelled Z-E-I-D-A. My QTH or geographic location is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, near Buzzards Bay in good old Cape Cod. My email address is N1BLF at Comcast.net. And you can write me if you choose to at 37 Juliet, J-O-L-I-E-T-T-E Street, North Dartmouth, D-A-R-T-M-O-U-T-H, Massachusetts, 02747. This recording is a production of the Courage Hand Hymn System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It's for the use of eligible Handy Hymn members only. You can call us at 763-520-0512, or you can email us at handyham@courage.org. Website is www.handyham.org. 73. Thanks for listening.